Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Foo followers around the world. Welcome to episode 53 of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast with your host, Ben Johnson. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the show. Remember, in order to stay up to date with all the latest martial arts movie news, reviews and podcasts, visit kungfumovieguide.com and follow us on social media. We are on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can do that by sending us an email. The email address is hello@kungfumovieguide.com. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the show, which features my conversation with the action director, fight choreographer, stunt performer, and Chinese martial arts master Vincent Wang. It's a good conversation. I do hope you enjoy it. Without any further ado, let's get on with the show. Here we go.
Well, if you're really so determined to have a fight, then I'll oblige.
Hello, 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 everybody around the world, Foo followers everywhere, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to this episode of the podcast. I hope you're doing okay and I hope you're not going too crazy. We're actually getting some really beautiful weather now here in the UK, which does make it very hard, of course, to stay indoors. So anyway, I hope you are doing well wherever you are listening to this. I've got a great conversation to share with you all today with the martial artist, stunt performer and fight choreographer Vincent Wang. Vincent was the fight coordinator on The Great Wall, which was that weird creature feature from 2016, starring Matt Damon and directed by author, filmmaker Chang Yimou. Vincent has also worked quite a bit in Vietnam with the director Victor Vu. His credits in Vietnam include the fun head-swapping superhero movie Loi Bao, and he was also the action designer on Victor's horror film The Immortal. His most recent project as a fight coordinator is Cruella, which sounds really interesting. Cruella is a live-action prequel to Disney's 101 Dalmatians, and it stars Emma Stone, Mark Strong and Emma Thompson. That film has wrapped, which is great news, just finished in time for the lockdown. And according to IMDb, Cruella will be released in May 2021. Vincent has worked in the film industry for over two decades, and he's performed stunts on a number of huge movie franchises, including quite a few James Bond films. He's done stunt work on The Force Awakens, The Bourne Ultimatum, Edge of Tomorrow. He's worked with Keanu Reeves. He did a bit of fight work on Man of Tai Chi. He also worked on 47 Ronin as well with Keanu. He's done a load of Marvel films as well, and he was also a fight arranger on Doctor Strange. So he's been involved in a lot of amazing movies, and his background is particularly fascinating because Vincent, from the early age of six, was enrolled at a Chinese martial arts school, a wushu school. So we do go into quite a bit of detail in this conversation about what life was like growing up at a Chinese martial arts school. I actually first met Vincent very briefly at last year's Fighting Spirit Film Festival. He had attended a screening of Loi Bao alongside the film's producer Jason Ningao. I have checked on YouTube, and the great team there at Fighting Spirit have uploaded that full Q&A. So if you want to check out the full Q&A on Loi Bao, then you can go onto YouTube. It's all recorded and uploaded to there. I made a mental note while I was watching that Q&A to contact Vincent afterwards and try and get him on the show. He does live in London, so we did manage to arrange a conversation in which I visited his home and recorded this chat that you're about to hear. It was recorded back in March of this year, 2020, just before lockdown was announced. And I will go into a little bit more detail about that in a moment. Before I do, I did just want to flag up a few things following on from our previous episode with Maria Tran and Scott Adkins. We got a lot of love for the film recommendations that Scott made during that conversation that I had with him, particularly around a couple of underrated martial arts films, one of which was Lao Ga Lung's The Scorpion King. A lot of great feedback online around The Scorpion King and, of course, No Retreat, No Surrender 2, Raging Thunder. A lot of love out there from you guys for both of those titles, which was really nice to see off the back of our previous episode. I did want to flag that Scott's new film is out now in the USA. It's a sequel to his earlier film, The Debt Collector. It's called Debt Collectors, and our review of Debt Collectors was embargoed at the time of releasing our previous episode, but it is now live on our website, kungfumovieguide.com. So if you do want to read our thoughts on the new Scott Adkins film, Debt Collectors, head over to our website and you can read our review there. If you haven't heard the show yet with Scott Adkins and Maria Tran, you can, of course, go back and take a look on all of the major podcast providers, along with all of our previous episodes, which feature people like Gareth Evans, the director of The Raid and the new Gangs of London TV series, which we very much recommend if you haven't seen Gangs of London yet. We've got episodes with Bruce Lee's daughter, Shannon Lee, Hollywood stunts legends like J.J. Perry and Heidi Moneymaker, action film stars like Don the Dragon Wilson, and loads more. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Acast, SoundCloud, many, many more. And we are releasing new episodes every 2 weeks in this current season 5. So in order to make sure that you never miss an episode, just simply subscribe to the show using your podcast provider. And thank you so much if you do that already. That is awesome. Thank you so much for your ongoing support. I also wanted to plug something else to you guys, another release which is out there and available to purchase now. It is a Blu-ray of the film Dynamo, which has landed on Blu-ray thanks to the filmmaker, action film star and former podcast guest Michael Worth. Michael has sent me a copy of the film on Blu-ray, and it's really great to see this film digitally restored and just looking glorious. It's from an original uncut 35mm print of the film, and there's also a bonus 2K scan of an alternate 16mm cut of the film on there as well. Michael Worth, of course, if anyone isn't aware, is an avid collector and a fan of the Bruceploitation subgenre of kung fu movies, made popular after the death of Bruce Lee and starring people like Bruce Lai, Bruce Lee, and Dragon Lee. They're three of probably the most famous Bruce Lee imitators. Dynamo is a 1978 Bruce Lai film. It's got some pretty decent fight scenes in there and a good cast as well. And I would say, you know, there's some pretty bad Bruceploitation films out there. Dynamo is one of the better ones. And what's especially amazing about these Blu-ray releases that Michael is putting out is all the amazing bonus content which he is preparing and releasing as part of these releases. So on Dynamo, for instance, there is a mini featurette on how these old kung fu films are being digitally restored, and there's also an audio commentary featuring Michael and the UK broadcaster and TV presenter Ian Lee, who is a huge kung fu movie fan. If you want to learn a bit more about this subject and Bruceploitation films in particular, then I would recommend you listen back to our episode with Michael Worth. It is on episode 20 of this podcast. I would also recommend Michael's podcast called The Clones Cast, a Bruceploitation podcast that is a fantastic listen. So do check that out if you don't already. Michael is working very hard to present these films in their most pristine versions and to give these films the respect that they deserve. So we do commend him on his hard work in this area, and I do highly recommend, if you are a fan of old Kung Fu films, then check out the new release of Dynamo, which is available now from wherever it is that you buy your Blu-rays. Okay, let's throw over now to my conversation with Vincent Wang. This was great to chat to Vincent. I should just set up this conversation a little bit. Vincent has had a bit of a journey with regards to this whole coronavirus situation. He initially went back to his home in China to celebrate Chinese New Year with his parents, and that was just as the coronavirus pandemic was kicking off, so he was then forced to go into lockdown while in China until it was safe for him to be able to travel back to London. He did then manage to fly back to London, and then obviously when he landed he had to go into self-quarantine again for another 14 days. So as soon as it was safe then for Vincent to go back into the world and have face-to-face conversations, we did manage to arrange this conversation. And then, literally a week or so after this conversation took place, the UK government announced our own lockdown. So all in all, Vincent has been pretty much in lockdown now for most of 2020. He's got a young family there as well, so that obviously brings its own challenges. Interestingly, though, he has been very productive during his downtime. He has been filming quite a lot of training and exercise videos. He was doing a lot of that in China and sharing them on social media over there. He has since been doing the same thing from his home here in London on his own YouTube channel. And he has been sharing things like some Qigong exercises, some tips on how to stay healthy. There's some stretching exercises. He's also doing how to cook healthily and a few of his favourite Chinese meals. For instance, I just saw him prepare Chinese lamb and cabbage, so that's a bit of fun. I will put links to all of Vincent's social media in the description of this episode of the show, so you can find out a lot more about Vincent there by clicking on those links. I will be back at the end of this conversation for a little bit more talking, but until then, let's throw over now to my conversation with the martial artist, instructor, action director, stunt performer, and fight coordinator, Vincent Wang. The north of China, is that that's where your family is based?
Yeah, northwest of China.
Northwest of China?
Yeah.
What's it like up there in the north? It can get pretty cold.
Yes, it can get too extreme. And in the winter, I always remember when I was a kid, probably sometimes you can get minus 30, minus 35.
Wow.
And summer, you can get like 40 degrees, you know, and it's based in desert.
Yeah, so it's extremes extreme on both ways.
Yes, absolutely, yes. Yeah. Dry, you know. And yeah, I was brought up there, and I lived there until probably and I was 12-13. Then I went to Shanghai.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And okay, let's go through this then. So you were 6 years old when you first went to the this was a wushu school, is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yes, you have a very strict timetable.
Yeah,
in the morning you get up, you know, probably like 5:30, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning, and crack on a couple of hours morning training before I have breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Then
and what is breakfast?
You get, you know, the old Chinese steam bun, and yeah, has some pickled vegetables. You know, sometimes you get lucky, you get a couple of eggs, whatever. And that's breakfast. You know, it's no luxury, not like here. You can have bacon, egg, sausage, all those kind of high protein stuff. You know, and yeah, so that's what, you know, like. And also, like what people say, you know, wow, this is very intense. It is very 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 intense because and in a short period of time, you have to reach what the teacher asks for, the standard.
Mm. And it is quite strict, isn't it, there?
Very, very strict. And you are in the school, in this kind of dormitory. You are basically not allowed to go out during the week.
Right.
And also because the child, you know, for safety, for whatever, you know.
Fine.
And also because, you know, you have long days, high, you know, intense training. And after, you know, dinner, evening, you know, you rest bed, then by 10 or 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, you gotta go to bed.
Yeah.
Next morning you're gonna start again.
We do it all again.
Yeah, you gotta go again, exactly. You're pretty exhausted, you know.
Yeah. Did you miss your family?
Oh yeah, of course, you know, and in the time before I left, I was quite excited. Yes, you know, I don't have to go to school, study, yeah. You know, I can just be, you know, this kind of special school, do my kind of do something I love to do. But when I get there and I realize how tough it is, and of course, you know, at the young age, you miss your family, you miss your family, you know, mom, dad, you know, and probably, you know, I see them maybe once, twice a year. Because, you know, my dad, they're working and they're quite far, probably 8 hours away from...
Yeah, how far was the school from where your family were based?
It's a different city and it's about 8 hours, you know, at time. It's impossible, you know, to, you know, for them to visit me because, you know, they have their work as well. It's tough, but after a while, you start to get used to it.
Yeah. You don't resent them at all for that decision, sending you away from such a young age?
They didn't send me because I was luckily chosen by the school.
Yeah, you were, so you were selected.
Selected, yes.
Okay.
Selected, then obviously my dad, especially my dad, and they didn't like me to go to school.
You know,
because he wanted, like every parent, wants their kid to be like, engineer, doctors, some kind of,
sure.
You know, whatever.
One of the professions.
Exactly, yeah. Yes. And to be, you know, able to do sports and for them to think something, there's no future, you know?
Yeah.
But for me, I love it. And so obviously, you know, school, talked to my parents and the parents said, look, you know, he's still young. He's, you know, he doesn't know what he wants. And because in the end, it's still my choice.
Yeah.
So I left. And... of course, you know, I never blame my parents, but only thing is, you know, you do lose the childhood.
Yes, yeah, of course. So when did you graduate from that school?
And I stayed until probably when I was almost 18.
Wow.
And the reason is I always wanted to be a coach.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of be a coach, you have to go to university. So that's afterwards, that's what I was, and I went to Shanghai Sports University.
Yeah, you were professional at the school, which means you must have been earning money when you were there. Is that correct?
Yes, and I think when you get to a certain level, then you start to, government start to pay you, you know. And at time, obviously, it's not huge a lot. Because, you know, in school, food... and accommodation, clothes, they're all basically provided by the school, by the government.
Yeah.
And the amount of money they, you know, they pay us is just for, probably just for pocket money.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that, yeah. And at least something which is, helps my families, and they don't have to pay my kind of school fees, whatever.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sports is very expensive stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And government spend a lot of money. And to, you know, train, to provide, you know, in the best for the athletes, you know, to achieve.
Yeah, because we're talking thousands of kids enrolling, what, every year in these schools?
Oh, yes. I think every province in China, they have a professional, you know, sports schools, you know, such, you know, like wushu schools. Sometimes they have any other, you know, the sports.
The outcome of which for the Chinese government is what exactly? To, I guess, further the arts themselves? Or
I think it's, I think martial arts, wushu, it's been in Chinese, in Chinese culture for over, you know, probably thousands of years.
Yeah. It's the birthplace of martial arts, exactly.
So I think from as far as I remember, you know, from young age, and the government's always encourage people, you know, train, learn. It's something which is, you know, for the health side.
Yeah.
Because martial arts, you know, the first things in three histories you learn is not just for fighting. Number one is for health.
Yeah.
You know, so when you're stronger, and then you can be able to achieve and other things, you know.
Yeah,
so government encourage people
to enroll and to take
exactly,
part.
Yes, yeah, that's right, yeah.
But another offshoot of it is, obviously, we should say that this is the same training grounds that Donnie Yen went through, that Jet Li went through, Wu Jing went through, but not every single kid that gets enrolled is going to be the next Donnie Yen.
This is very tough, and Because when Jet Li, when Jackie Chan, when Donnie Yen, when, you know, they've been through a lot as well to achieve what they achieve now. Because they set a great example, you know, for all the young people. And I remember that when Jet Li, when the first movies he did was very successful in Shaolin Temple.
Yes,
1980s. Yes, I remember early 80s, yeah. I was quite young and as well. So we owe a lot of Chinese kids, and after we watch the film, they will want to go to Shaolin Temple.
Yeah.
They will want to become monk. They will want to learn martial arts.
Yeah.
And in a way, yes, it helps in help the lot of young people, you know, and something they can take up. But obviously, to get that level, to be able to become a super movie star, it's not easy.
No.
You know. And, you know, obviously there's only one Jet Li, there's only one Donnie Yen and Wu Jing. And, but at least them, for the stars, and they set a great example to the rest of the world or the young kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, just try and your best and fill up your dream.
Do you notice in China still there is... That is a route that people are still taking. If you're young and you're keen and you're into martial arts, they are enrolling in these schools, or is the uptake diminishing slightly?
I think it's also has changed now, because I remember that for the last 10 years, there are more like taekwondo schools and karate schools in China as well.
Yeah.
I think the reason is, because the Wushu never be in the Olympics.
Yeah, true.
And
there was talk of it becoming an Olympic sport,
yes,
though, wasn't
it? Yes, I think it's harder, because they realize that the Wushu has been in China for 1,000 years.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and
they've got an advantage.
They've got advantage. You know, if in the Olympics, it's not fair, probably, for the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And that's why they have karate and taekwondo. They're still in Shaolin Temple, in Shaolin, the area of Henan. There are still a lot of Wushu schools, and they teach, and but unfortunately, it's not as popular as used to be. You know.
Yeah, that's interesting. What skills do you think you need to make it through a training like that?
I think it's my personal thing is the disciplines and understand the why you do it.
Yeah.
And also importantly is what is your purpose? What you want to achieve?
Yeah.
You know, as myself, you know, from young age, you know, when you started, it's like your interest. You like that. Seems like all quite fun, but once you get to the high level, it's not fun anymore.
No,
it's big, like torture. You know what I'm saying? You know?
Yeah.
And because of that, through the training, then you learned a lot of self-discipline, and you learned a lot of kind of, you know, working hard, and you learned a lot is how to interact with your, you know, your friends, your brothers, sisters in the same team, and also you learned how to basically to help each other, and same time compete each other, you know. I think it's in the West world, a lot of people love Wushu, love learning all those kind of amazing and the skill. Unfortunately, I think it's the concept, understanding the, you know, and how much effort you need to put in, and how much discipline you need to, you know, get involved, and also it's something I think probably people often say, oh, you know, why the Chinese, they do Wushu better than Westerner? But I often say it's like, it's part of Chinese culture. If you are understand Chinese culture, it gives you a lot great kind of understanding about Wushu.
Yeah.
It's like people say, if you want to understand the culture better, you have to be able to speak the language.
Yeah.
You know,
and it is part of the national identity.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
So that must have been quite interesting when you first came over to the UK in the early 90s. you were invited to come over to teach here then?
Yes, teach here, yes.
What were the students like that you were teaching? I mean, what was the standard like?
Well, it's basically they all start, they're all beginners, you know, and obviously the wushu is quite hard to teach for people a lot older. Wushu, if you really want to be on top of the game, you have to start very young age.
Yeah.
And
so you don't see many wushu champions in their 30s
no,
or 40s.
No, you have to start very early because it's involved so much in our, you know, the flexibilities and balance.
Yeah.
I introduce a lot like Tai Chi for a start.
Yeah.
And something which is, you know, for them is easy to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
As they're getting a bit more interest, they get better and understand a bit more. Then I start to introduce more kind of wushu,
do
basic training and different kind of traditional styles.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize is people love it, but same time when it comes to the basic and they start to lose the interest because they want to see how Jali, how Don Yan, how we do.
They want to be jumping.
Exactly.
Fantastic
movements, but they don't realize it's all but foundation.
Yeah,
you know, basic, how important it is. So obviously when do basic, you know, that, you know, for us, we're going to take years, we train, you know, we learn every day, we're doing this basic again. And even now, you know, I'm, you know, in my 50s now, I'm still doing my basic training.
Yeah.
So when you have basic foundation, strong foundation, of course, you will be able to pick up anything.
Absolutely.
It's easy to adopt.
Xiao Tin Shen will soon be dead. I've laid an ambush for him.
Filthy traitor!
You're teaching in London during the 90s, but then suddenly there's a film stunt career starts emerging. How did that come about?
I remember this. At the time I was teaching in the school, and we have some kind of stunt people, you know, and they come down train and, you know, wushu. And also I remembered I got a very, very good friend who's called Peter Badiro. He gave me a lot of kind of help and advice. So since then I started to train.
Mm.
And during that time, and sometimes I get called, people recommended, and do a TV show for BBC or whatever, that I look for some martial arts people or whatever.
Yeah.
And I did a couple of show, you know, with Lenny Henry or some other stuff. And from that, and I started realizing, wow, this is a cool thing, you know?
Yeah.
Something I can use my skill, and I love it.
Yeah.
And then
and I get paid.
Yeah. And after that, then I was like, okay, maybe I'll start with something new, in a new career, something
okay.
different.
So it was genuinely, it wasn't an aspiration for you, it wasn't on your radar, it just you sort of fell into it.
Yes, because when I was a kid in China, obviously in terms to get into the movie business is quite hard, and also there's so many people in martial arts world, in the wushu world, and you know, obviously, you know, most people, you know, at that time, you know, they think, oh, the best thing is to become martial arts coach or become something or whatever, you know, and think about, oh, to become movie stars at the time, probably still early.
Yeah.
Then in England, then I never thought about, you know, going to be, you know, working involved in Hollywood films.
Yeah.
And as you're teaching life, you never know, you know, and, you know, people you meet, and people, you know, then you come across, and suddenly it light up your, you know, light up your, you know,
it's who you know.
Yeah, we know. And suddenly, oh wow, this is cool. Yeah, since then, because of him, then I start to focus and train and get all my skills, and then I become stuntman.
Yeah. So I've got written down here your first sort of big job, I guess, is Tomorrow Never Dies. Is that right?
Yeah, Tomorrow Never Dies. At that time, I it's 1997.
Yeah.
Michelle Yeoh and brought her team to England.
Yes.
And they look for somebody who will be able to speak the language, help them. Because they, you know, a lot of Hong Kong stuntmen, they don't speak much English.
I was going to say, being able to speak English, you know, as well as Mandarin, it must have helped.
Absolutely. And at that time, I haven't basically and qualified to become stuntman yet.
Yeah, okay.
I was still in the middle of training.
Yeah.
Then I got a call and asked me, you know, to help them. But I taste the beauty side, you know, in the film business, you know.
Yeah.
That can give me a lot more set my mind and something what I want to do.
So you saw the magic of the movies and thought this is for me.
Yes, I think that's brilliant. I said, wow, this is cool, you know. And you know, sometimes you meet all different people and the movie stars, and sometimes you see how a movie make, you know,
yeah,
in a meet happen, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, and didn't realize it's how hard work, you know.
Yeah.
Afterwards, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lovely photo of you with the stunt team with Michelle. You obviously met Michelle, and yeah.
Oh yes, and I basically had a great relationship with, you know, with her and her team, because and I think they were here for probably 2-3 months, and every weekend, and Michelle would invite and all her stunt team and myself, and we go to the Queensway and have dim sum and hang out.
Yeah.
Sometimes weekend we go to the club, whatever. It's great, and she was an amazing lady, and yeah, and she really care about her and the stunt team.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, it's something which is I learned that is so important to have a good strong team
in Hong Kong. In China you see the action directors, the credits there, it's up in the opening credits, and it seems generally on sets maybe there's a bit more respect for the stunt teams. That's an outside looking in. I know you work in the industry, so what's your thoughts on that?
Well, this is a very, very interesting question. And having working in England, in, you know, and with in Hollywood films for the last 20 years, when you work in Asia as an action director, you have so much responsibilities and so much power.
Mm.
And obviously, you know, you get involved with the director, and obviously before you start to start prepping, you have the script, and you have to, you know, have meetings with the directors and to get to know the vision of what he want,
yeah,
you know, what he want to do, and at the same time, and you give him a lot of kind of new idea after me when you read the script.
Mm.
Once, you know, he agree with that, you get involved as acting director.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
your whole package.
Yeah.
And
but you're in really early.
Early, yes, yeah, absolutely. And because the power you have and the responsibility you have and the trust with directors, producers, and they have to trust you. In the West, they don't call action director, they call second director,
yeah,
or stunt coordinator, you know. Yeah. They basically just do the job.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you know, people don't really give our stunt, you know, people credit, you know what I'm saying.
Mm.
Even Oscar, you know, they never mention it, whatever, you know.
I know the Hong Kong Film Awards do have, you know, best action director, you know, it's held on quite a high pedestal, isn't it? And awards,
yes,
are given out there, but they're not at the Oscars.
No, because I think because Jackie Chan, he realized it's how important get people to notice, to realize, and people, stunt people, and they're working, you know, extremely hard and risk their life,
mm-hmm,
you know, and so they want to set up this kind of award and to award people to achieve, high achieve about on stunt world, you know,
yeah, yeah,
like best action director and best, you know, action in and actors, you,
yeah,
know, and choreographer, whatever involved. As I think it's something to let people to realize, to notice, and those people, and they should be in credit.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And, you know, I think I think something which is great.
Yeah.
I hope that, you know, in the West world, Hollywood one day, they can do that. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You know.
You're supposed to be a professional killer. He's posing as a woodcutter to fool you. Don't you know that?
You've been involved in some of the biggest action film franchises of the last 20 years or so. From Batman Begins, more Bond films, Die Another Day, Skyfall, you were in The Bourne Ultimatum, National Treasure, you're in Sherlock Holmes, Captain America, Thor, Dark World, you're in the Marvel Universe as well. How does it normally go when you're a stunt performer on this? Do you know in the morning what stunt you're actually doing later that day?
No. I think, you know, as a stunt performer, you know, you get call from the stunt coordinators and, you know, do a job, and mostly, obviously, you don't know what's going on, and because stunts and things, script sometimes change on the day as well.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes just last minute, and the stunt coordinator says, okay, do this.
Yeah.
You just have to perform and do whatever, you know, yeah. And ask for. And be a bit more kind of flexible. That's why as a professional stunt performer, and you have to be ready and also high trained and also very skillful as well. You'd be able to handle and do the job. At the same time, you have to make sure that protect yourself, look after yourself, make sure you don't get hurt.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And yeah, so I think, you know, for all those movies, every job is different, is interesting and challenging as well. And I think it's through all the years, what for myself is and I learned a lot from different, you know, stunt coordinators, different stunt performers.
That was always your goal, was to eventually, you wanted to be a fight choreographer, you wanted to then move into that,
I think,
that role.
Yeah, I think every stunt performer, you know, beginning, you know, you want to, you know, a performing stuff and come to a certain stage or get older and yeah. Also get whatever, then you have to move on, yeah. You know, I started because training martial art, training wushu,
yeah.
And because of this experience, and I understand the more about fighting mm-hmm. side, that I lack the creativities, you know, and designed, you know, the different style of fight. And I love that because that's really is kind of my thing, you know.
Yeah, of course.
And I enjoy doing that as well. And yeah, so that's something which is, you know, I work towards the, you know, the fight coordinator, yeah. You know, fight choreographer, you know. Yeah.
The big one here is the Great Wall, 2016, working with Zhang Yimou.
Yeah, Zhang Yimou. Yes.
You'd done a bit of fight choreography before that, though, hadn't you? You worked on Doctor Strange, I believe.
Yes, and then the Doctor Strange as afterwards, and yeah. I was.
That was after Great War.
After Great War, yeah, yes, okay. And so basically, I did the. I think it's the Now You See Me, two.
Now You See Me two. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, two, yeah. And I was fight ranger as well. And
that had a lot of great British martial yeah, arts talent, yes, didn't that, yes, in that movie, didn't
yes,
it?
Yes, and that was quite fun. And you know, the stunt coordinator was great. And before that happened, it was a few years, then I got called to do the Great Wall. I was in China for summer holiday. I got called. I said, then they asked me to do the Great Wall, and. I was very excited. Then somehow I think the finance went wrong and they canceled that film.
Yeah, okay, interesting.
That, yeah, that 3 years later, suddenly I got a call. I said, oh, are you available? You know, and from some point, Buster, I said, oh, you know, I'm doing the Great Wall, you know. So can you come? I said, wow. I said, God must watching. So that was a few years ago, you know, something, you know, I supposed to do, but now suddenly, you know.
Was Zhang Yimou attached to the project back then?
No.
On its first incarnation?
No.
That's interesting.
No, first, yeah. I think, at time, I think, as far as I remember, the director who's supposed to do is the director who did The Last Samurai.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. What's his name?
I can't remember his name.
Edward Zwick?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes, I think that's...
Well, that would have been a different film.
Probably, probably. And I remember the script at the time I read, and the script after, you know, the Johnny Moe did, I think probably it's quite different as well.
Yeah. Talk me through that experience then, because to watch it, it's an interesting film, isn't it? Matt Damon is in it, Andy Lau is in it. For Chang Yi-Mu, though, it's quite a departure. Were you in on the sort of ground level, as it were, from the early stages?
Yes, I was on the floor. I think first of all they have a different team from you know, different stunt coordinator from America, different team. I think somehow I don't know what happens, and they left. So in the end, different second unit directors who did the Dracula, which is our work with him as well, and also the stunt coordinator Buster Reeves, and also on the Dracula as the stunt coordinator. I think, you know, so when they got the job, and the Buster called me, and so I went there. When they obviously they started already a few months ago already prepping.
Oh, okay.
And when I came, obviously in the middle of the prepping, it's quite a difficult situation, because the department, every department, the high rank, that are all from the West, you know, like you know, for example, all the hairs, makeup, costume, or whatever department, constructions, whatever, they're all from the, you know, different West world.
Yeah.
That, and the Chinese obviously is helping, you know, the film. But because I'm involved with stunt department, and I realized when I first arrived that the Chinese stunt people, they don't get on with the West stunt people.
Yeah.
They don't really get talked much, and it's just it's a horrible situation.
Interesting.
Very, very horrible, and I felt that it's going to be difficult. But luckily, because I'm Chinese and I lived in China for 23 years and understand the Chinese culture, I understand Chinese people. At the same time, I lived in the West world and working, you know, in all those years, you know. Then when I got there, the first of all, I need to basically to show the Chinese stunt team that how much that I appreciate them, how much I respect them.
Yeah,
I think it's all important about is to respect each other.
Yeah,
and you know,
is that why there was conflict there initially, because there wasn't enough respect being shown by the Hollywood?
Exactly, team. The Hollywood. Yeah. They think, oh, the Chinese, they're not great, they're not blah blah. And, you know, and obviously the Chinese thinking, well, doesn't matter you're Hollywood or not, but we're making hundreds of movies, you know, a year.
Yeah,
you know, we do the same thing. Our Chinese film is still doing well. Yeah. It doesn't matter. I mean, a lot of Hollywood, a lot of the fights, a lot of the wires, they all learned from China, from Hong Kong, 20 years ago.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
It took me a long time to eventually, to, you know, they accept me as well. And we get on very well with the Chinese team.
Yeah.
And we eventually become like family from one team now.
What was working with Chang Yi-Mu like?
Well, he's great, because I always love his films, and I remember, you know, I watched, you know, his film like and Raising Red Lanterns.
Yeah, and his older, because he wasn't a wuxia director initially. Yes. Yeah.
So what I love him, before I went to China and to do the Great War film, and I rewatched a lot of his old films, and just try to see what his style, you know, and I realized he loves colors.
Yeah.
And he loves big scenes with a lot of people, you know.
Big scales.
Yeah. It's just unbelievable. So obviously, the Great War, you can see, you know, some days, you know, we have probably 2,000-3,000 extras.
Incredible.
You know, just massive. And also you can see the every soldiers, you know, different soldiers and different, you know, whatever, they have different colors, different, you know, look, different whatever, you know, and the costume. It's just amazing. And I remember, you know, in a couple of days, you know, we shot and just, I look at it like, wow, this is the typical Zhang Yimou style, you know, even though the film obviously didn't do very well.
Yeah, which I was going to say, I mean, do you, I mean, you know, you've worked on so many films, but I guess when you're that close up to a film and you see how much time, you know, how much effort, how much money goes into making such epic productions like The Great Wall, and then suddenly, you know, it comes out and it just sort of fizzles away. How do you feel about that?
Yes, it's a shame. And because obviously, you know, for me, I think is you know, the film doing well or not doing well is up to the, you know, it's the audience, you know, the decision. The name is amazing, The Great Wall, you know, everyone knows in China, everyone knows. But unfortunately, you know, even though nowadays, I mean, when I talk to a lot of Chinese people in China, they will say, you know, this Great Wall, unfortunately, it just fights with all the creatures.
Yeah.
It doesn't make
sense. It kind of comes out of nowhere.
And yeah, it's just ridiculous. People just come down there and just threw the body to the creatures, and then eating whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And suddenly you get two Western people come down, save the world.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Did you do well in China then?
Not really. And I mean, beginning some people, they said, okay, you know, with the CG, you know, with the CG was quite amazing, blah, blah, blah. But obviously the stories, a lot of people didn't like it, you know. For me, you know, what I really enjoy for me is the great experience working with a Chinese stunt team and also a big production.
Wang Shenhui, you can't fool me this time. I want revenge. I won't go until I've killed you.
Your career has taken an interesting direction with your work with Victor Vu and working in Vietnam as well. How did those opportunities come about?
It's very, very interesting. And because and I've been working in Hollywood and England for all those Hollywood films, and then I always want to try something different.
Yeah.
And the one day I got a friend and Jason, and he's a British Vietnamese, and we knew each other a long time ago, you know, probably 20 years ago. We are a good friend, and then he's very passionate in the film as well. So when he went to Vietnam, he wanted to start, you know, something. We want to produce some kind of films in Vietnam. Then obviously when he met Victor, and obviously Victor is at time, you know, he's still now is quite good big directors in Vietnam.
He's one of the biggest, isn't he?
Yes.
But traditionally not an action filmmaker.
No, because he had experience, did one action movies that didn't do well, you know, he was so disappointed and whatever. Then Jason tried to persuade him. So look, it's like car. Everybody produced a new car, but they only change the outside, but never change the inside engine.
Mm.
You need something different. You want car go fast, you got the import from outside Vietnam. Then he basically told him about me, and obviously showed some kind of work what I did. So that would light up, you know, and Victor's, something maybe he should try. Then he started to talk to me, you know, and then he obviously started to change the script, put a lot of actions.
Yeah, because I've seen Lloyd Bao, and there's a lot of fight scenes in it.
A lot of fight.
Yeah.
Yes, a lot of fight. And it's funny things, when Jason called me and said, I said, yeah, sure, whatever. Then same time, I got another call to do the Tomb Raider.
Yes, yes.
And
this is the new one with Alicia Vikander.
Yes, and I thought that Stone Cold is a friend of mine as well. I said, unfortunately, I said, well, I got a call in the Vietnamese film as well, and they really want me to do it. They said, oh, forget the Vietnamese film, you know, their budget's very small, and let's do this, whatever. You know, I said, look, I want to have experience in Vietnam, something just small budget, and I want to experience that I have a total kind of control.
Yeah.
And to do a small budget films will be able to do well.
Yeah.
It's a challenge for me. And so in the end, I took the Lao Bao films.
Yeah.
Before I went to Vietnam, I already had the most choreography in my head already.
Yeah, okay.
Because every day...
In your head or it's a previst or...
No, not previst, no. Yeah, all in my head, because I know which each scenes, roughly what I want, roughly the styles, the movements that I want. Before I went to Vietnam, I told Jason, I said, look, I want the best stunt team in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Bring the best. I want to audition them. I want to choose them.
Mm-hmm.
I realized the difference is between the British stunt performers and the Vietnamese stunt performers. Because in England, we have six skills. People have trained very hard for many years. But in Vietnam, a lot of people, they just have one skill, or some people just interest in and learn, do some martial art, do something, whatever, do some parkour, do whatever, you know? And they copy a lot from Chinese films and Hong Kong films. Mm. And the way they reaction, the way they do things very different from here.
Yeah.
So I look at them and I chose probably 15, 20 stunt guys. Then I said, look, from now on, every day, I'm going to retrain you.
Yeah.
I want different reactions, different fight away. And yeah, so I got my team together, basically.
And what are you like as a fight choreographer? I mean, are you willing, are you quite open to, if someone in your team has a good idea, you'll say, yes, okay, maybe we can incorporate that in there? Is it quite a collaborative process?
Yes. I think, you know, one brain never as good as 10 brains.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And I always encourage my team guys and just give me a lot of ideas, you know. I encourage them, don't think your ideas, or maybe my idea is the most stupid idea. I think that sometimes the stupidest idea probably the best idea.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
In the audience, people watch films, people always catch people's eyes is the idea.
Mm.
Mm. Wow, this is a good idea, yeah. You know? I mean, come on. Everybody knows how to fight. You know? People say, I want some different fight. Come on, fight is fight.
Yeah.
But how can it catch people's eyes? Like, yeah. Oh, this is a good idea.
So how do you do that? I mean, how can you still create original fight scenes? Surely everything's been filmed already.
Yes, I think it's just interesting. It was Lao Bao. And first of all, you know, I did some fight. And after that, the director said, I think it's about too wushu.
Mm.
Because also, don't forget, Vietnam, they have their own styles.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, and they're not really, you know, in kind of wushu styles to suitable for this film.
Yeah,
and after that, I had to think about. I said, how can I make it, you know, to adapt the audience? People can see. Oh, it's not quite a wushu, but it can still see the you know the styles as Asian style. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I start. Okay, now I want everything to look a bit more real.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to use a lot of wire work.
Yeah.
Because use wire work costs a lot of time.
Yes, yes.
And money. So we didn't have a lot of time. We didn't have a lot of money. So I said, look, let's do something more real. And also, I don't want a lot of kind of spinning, you know, for nothing. The kick, you know, it doesn't look real, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I said, okay, now, and that's what I want. I told all the stunt people, look, this is not what I want.
Yeah.
I want something real. Feel real, feel people can do it. And also with characters, he's got a strong power, but he's not Superman.
If you're going to take on a job as a fight choreographer, you've got to understand the motivations there of the character. Would you say that's good advice for
this is a very good, very, very good advice, because in action, if the action doesn't tell a story, just action, it doesn't attract the audience.
Yeah.
It doesn't sell the action.
Yeah.
It's always just action, you know, it's boring. But if the actions can relate to with the characters, with the stories, can link with them, that will make more impact.
Yeah.
On the action,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Even Lao Bao films, I mean, people see it. And after I ask a lot of people, and they'll enjoy it, they can see the actions basically changes, you know, through the characters,
yeah.
You know, when he changes, the fire changes, the stories, you know, get all involved, and it doesn't make sense, you know, to the end.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
And that's something which is, you know, after Joe finished, you know, film finished, there were a lot of people when cinema see that, they all say, wow, it's great, they all enjoyed it. And for me to hear that, you know, I'm quite pleased.
I bet. Yeah. And particularly because it's Vietnam, it's not a country that you'd worked in before, or the language. Can you speak the language?
No.
No.
And luckily that, and Victor, you know, obviously he's American Vietnamese, and he brought up in America, and with stunt people, you know, because they're all professional, and when you tell something, and even though the language barrier and they still be able to pick up, they still understand what you want, you know?
Yeah. But I heard a story that you were working on Lloyd Bow, there was a stunt that wasn't quite looking right, and you, because you have a career as a stunt performer, just said, no, this just isn't good enough, I'm going to do the stunt.
Yeah, so because there was one scene, it's under probably 70-foot jump. And we have two stunt doubles. One is for fire doubles. The other one is the parkour double. And what happened though? The day that the parkour guys does the jump, and because I want particularly the body holding in a certain position, because when you're on a wire, when you jump, because the gravities, right, it pulling down, you're very hard for you to holding these positions. Yeah. Because when it's long shot, the camera, so we need to see him jump off all the way down to the truck. So we need kind of holding the position as long as you can. But first take, you know, I was sitting and watching a monitor with directors, you know, and come down. It wasn't look great and doesn't hold him anymore. You know, he jump off, and after within 2-3 seconds, just the body start losing the shape.
Yeah, yeah.
The first jump, I was so okay. You know, let's try the second one. So I pull the double here. I explain to him. Then second take, still same. Then in the end, obviously, we didn't have a lot of time to shoot again.
Yeah.
You can see the victor start getting a bit frustrated and ask me, so how can we achieve? I look at it, I said, but the only thing I achieve is I do it. He said, sure. I said, because they think action directors, you know, obviously, normally action directors, they don't do stunts, whatever, you know?
No.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, because luckily I'm always fit. I'm always, you know, ready, sure. Whatever. So I knew, you know, these situations, you know, if no matter how I change, how I tell the stunt performer the double, he's not going to achieve. So in the end, I said, I do it. So and you can see that the whole, you know, and the camera department, everybody's like, what? It's going to do it? Oh, yeah. I said, yeah, sure. So basically, I just radioed the costume, the head costume. I said, just bring the doubles, the costume. I do it. And they were like, wow. And so I...
Lead by example.
Yeah. I changed. And after that, and so basically, I said, how many guys pulling wires? At the time, they were probably 6-7. I said, no. I said, give me 12 guys.
Yeah.
I said, just make sure.
Doubly sure.
Yeah, doubly sure. Yeah. Yeah. Because I said, look, you know, and I'm not 100% sure, whatever. And they said, oh, do you need the rehearsal? I said, no, I have no time. I just do it anyway.
Yeah.
So I just did the wind jump.
Wow. 70 foot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wind jump. And boom, done, finished. And after, I said, oh, my job done now. Suddenly, they said, oh, we need a 40 foot and jump with no wires. And just from back shot and just come out of the shape, just jump off, you know, on the back shot. And they look at me and say, do you want to do it? I said, oh, okay, do it. So I did another.
You did that as well?
I did another 40-foot and jump. It was, yeah, it's no way. Yeah, it was good. It's just, you know, just a couple of jumps. It was fine.
Yeah.
Actually, I was quite enjoyed and because it gave me a bit of adrenaline, you know.
Going, yeah.
Yeah.
Tiger catches the chicken.
Working in Vietnam, do you see yourself going back there? Maybe you've worked with Victor on 2 films.
Yes,
now.
After Lao Bao and Victor called me back for the second one for Immortals, and more of a horror film
that one.
Yes, yeah. More, and and also I had a few actions. I think I had a good experience, but now it's like, and I said to, you know, and Jason and also Victor as well, and I had experience in Vietnam, and if something's come up again, if the story is good, if even if, you know, the script is good, and up the mind, you know, do it.
Yeah.
And because now I had 2 movies experience, I'm sure, and I'd be able to handle, you know.
Yeah. Do you necessarily need to travel? I mean, there's so many films are produced here in the UK. You know, the work is coming in, it seems. Is that right?
Yes, there are a lot of movies in the UK now, and I think it's sometimes in the old movies they work in different places, you know, and I think as there are so many fight choreographers, you know, in the stunt business, and a lot of people and who want to become fight choreographer, there are a lot of kind of competition as well, you know,
yeah.
Happens. But you know, for me, it's like I'm just keep trying and do whatever you know I can. And if I'm not busy working film, I can always spend time do my kind of own training.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
And do better. Can the personal training as well, and also I have different kind of clients, and also I do a lot of self-healing and treatment for people because I have experienced injuries through years kind of training and the stunts. You know, a lot of people suffering through the profession and as stunt performer, you know, injuries, and I hope that I can be able to help them to be able to get better and not suffer in old age in later in life.
Amazing. So, the natural progression of things, because we've seen this in Hollywood, people now moving from being a stunt performer into a stunt coordinator or fight choreographer, moving into second unit, and then you're directing movies. I've got to ask, is that something that you would like to pursue, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think every, people are working in film stunts in a business, they all love to progress eventually to achieve, become stunt coordinators, fight coordinators, then eventually second directors or become director, whatever.
Yeah.
This is kind of high achievement, eventually, And it's like the... When you do wushu, first of all, you beginning, start learning stuff, then you start compete, then you start winning medals, then you become whatever, then suddenly, like Wujing director, like Wujing, like Donnie Yen, first of all, become martial artist, then start working the film business as actor, then eventually they become director,
Wujing's has huge success.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, it's big success. I think it's something just for everyone, want to achieve, something. Yeah, of course.
And you must have projects in your heads that you'd quite like to make.
Yeah, of course. And I have my kind of
stories. Which you won't tell me.
I have stories and something, whatever. Hopefully, and in my head, then when I can find someone can interesting, then they'll be able to work together and shoot, something my own kind of film.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, listen, we wish you all the best of luck, and do let us know if how it's all going.
Yeah, thanks so much, Ben. Thank you. Great chat to you,
Thank you so much, Vincent. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Vincent Wang there. Great stuff. Really nice guy, and I really enjoyed spending time chatting to Vincent. We wish him all the very best, particularly during this very tough time for not just the film industry, obviously, but all of the creative arts. I think everyone out there is struggling in one way or another at the moment with regards to what's going on in the world. So let's hope that things do pick up again very soon. And we do very much look forward to seeing what Vincent works on next. As I said, his next big movie will be Cruella, which will be released in May 2021. That looks really fascinating, and I'm intrigued to see what Disney do with that franchise. One final recommendation that I did just want to mention here before I go was in relation to Vincent Wang's upbringing at a Chinese wushu school. His story very much reminded me of a 2012 German documentary, which is called Dragon Girls, which is directed by Inigo Wessner, and it follows three girls that are training at the Shaolin Taegu Kung Fu School, which is located just next to the Shaolin Monastery there in China. It is a fascinating and at times heartbreaking documentary, which really highlights the types of training and the activities that do go on in the kind of kung fu schools that Vincent would have trained at. So yeah, do check out that documentary. I can't recommend it highly enough. I have written some words about Dragon Girls on our website, kungfumovieguide.com, so you can read a bit more about it there. But if you do want to check it out, I have just double checked and the full documentary is available on YouTube. So that's called Dragon Girls. Go and check that out. It's a fascinating documentary. Okay, that really is it. now, thank you so much for checking out this episode of the show, and thank you for listening all the way to the very end. A big thank you also to Vincent Wang for taking the time to talk to me. I will be back again in 2 weeks' time with another episode of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. In the meantime, do get in touch with us if you do have any questions, any feedback, anything you want to get off your chest, anything you want to ask us at all. Do get in touch. The email address is hello@kungfumovieguide.com. Send us a message over social media. We do very much like to hear from you. In the meantime, I will say farewell, and do take care, stay safe, and stay sane, and I will see you next time on the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. Bye for now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.